Good morning. My name is Andre Shembeni from Economic Freedom Fighters.
Good morning. My name is Kenneth Mishra from the ECDP. Thank you.
Good day. I am Ahmed
Mansour. Recording in progress.
I am Ahmed Mansour Sheikh Imam from the National Freedom Party.
Thank you very much, honorable members. We are interviewing for the Critical Infrastructure Council. The Critical Infrastructure Council is a new council which we are interviewing according to the new Critical Infrastructure Act, which was assented to by the President in November 2019. We were unable to have interviews sooner because as the President assented to the Act and as the Act was promulgated, we shortly had COVID-19. As you know, Parliament in itself did not meet for a while until we were able to prepare for hybrid sessions. So you are the first cohort or group of members of the council that will be nominated. We have shortlisted 20 candidates for interview. Of the 20 candidates, we'll shortlist for 10 over the process of interviews from yesterday until tomorrow. The shortlisted 10 candidates will be, their names will be forwarded to the Minister of Police. Of the 10 candidates, 5 will be appointed. So we nominate 10, and the final 5 will be then be appointed by the minister. Once we have nominated our 10 candidates, we will take those 10 names to the National Assembly for approval, and then we will forward the names to the minister. Your names will appear in on the order paper of the National Assembly. That will then be a public announcement, but that does not mean that you are appointed. Once you are appointed by the minister, you will receive indication that you have been appointed. Is that clear to you? Are you clear on that, honorable members?
Yes.
That the 10 will not be appointed, but that 5 out of the 10 will be appointed. You understand that? So of the 20 we interview, eventually only 5 will be appointed. The salary is also paid by the Ministry of Police. Once you're appointed, the terms of your appointment will be explained to you. Then thank you very much again for availing yourself for this interview. Could you kindly please, as we start the interview, Mr. Rambal, tell us about your experience as well as your qualifications which you have acquired thus far, and could you please highlight the areas of your experience and what you believe makes you a suitable candidate for this position. So this is a way of you introducing yourself to the panel. You've now met the panel. It is your opportunity to introduce yourself to us. Each candidate has 1 hour, and you can have less than 1 hour, but you cannot have more than 1 hour. So the time for your interview starts now. You may introduce yourself. So your 1 hour starts from now. Welcome.
Okay. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity and to be the first candidate for this interview. My name is Nkangwena Rambao, can easily call me Rambao, born and bred in Limpopo. I'll start with my experience, then come to my qualifications, and then move to why I think this experience and qualification will make me suitable for the position. My experience, I've worked in the telecommunication industry, at Telkom, and then I moved to public sector in Gauteng Department of Health in 2 hospitals. The first position was a data technologist And then I moved to Tembisa Hospital, where I assumed the role of Assistant Director ICT. And I moved and joined the petrochemical industry, Sasol to be specific. Occupied two roles there, the service management specialist, the manager for service management, and then I became the supplier relations, managing the contracts. And then from 2015, February, I ventured into the self-employment. I became an interpreneur premier full-time to date. And then 2017 to 2019, we created a project that seeks to create biochemicals using agricultural produce. And then it didn't materialize due to a number of challenges, including the withdrawal of technology and the financial flows. And then I'm currently an independent consultant, consulting various clients in terms of the digital transformation strategies. Maybe I should only think that while I was at Tembisa Hospital, I acted in the senior positions. I also was recommended to the hospital board, where I acted as board members. Currently, I run Tenacity STEM Foundation, which is science, technology, engineering.
My apologies, Mr. Rambo. Do you maybe have an electronic gadget close to you because it's affecting the sound? Or you have a phone? A cell phone. Yes, even if it's off, could you just allow Mr. Hao Mobisutu? If we can just, it's not that we are accusing you of anything, it's our sound. If you don't mind, we'll give it to you as soon as you're done. So if because of our recording, the meeting is being recorded, we are trying to be as fair to you as possible. Remember, those who are doing the recordings are virtual.
Thank you.
You do accept it. Sorry for interrupting you. You may continue.
Okay. I was indicating that while I was at Tembisa Hospital, I had an opportunity to serve as a board member of the Tembisa Hospital board. And then I was also indicating that I currently run the Tenacity STEM Foundation, STEM for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, improving the offering the extra classes, math and science and English to grade 12 learners in the village where I come from. I'm also running the agricultural project in the province. With regards to my qualifications, studied a Bachelor of Arts at University of Venda, continued studied the university education diploma, which made me a qualified teacher. By that I should have indicated in the experience, I became a student teacher at Dumani Agricultural School. And then I moved on and studied A+, it's a technical qualification of fixing computers, assembling and disassembling computers. And then I became, it was an international certificate. I also studied Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer, which is an MCSE, it's an international certificate as well. And then I moved on, continued and did Information Systems Management Certificate with Damelin, also Diploma with Damelin, and then I went to RAU, then before changed to University of Johannesburg, studied extra curricular diploma in information technology, and then I registered for Masters in IT with University of Pretoria. I've also continued registered for Masters in Business Leadership with School of Business Leadership, UNISA. And then last year, I did an executive course in Liberty Development Program with West University. There are a number of training programs that I've done, which is expert negotiation with GIBS, hospital management with West Business School. I think that's the summary for my qualifications and experience.
You said quite a mouthful. You do understand the functions of the Critical Infrastructure Council?
Yes.
You don't need to answer, but the members who do ask the questions would get you an understanding of what you perceive the functions to be. Honorable Pico.
Thank you, Chair. My question would be, what is your understanding of critical infrastructure, and why is it important for critical infrastructure in our country to be protected?
Let me give answer from with a historical perspective. Then it was the National Key Point of 1980, wherein it was enacted by the Papata government to watch it characterized as an act of sabotage and terrorism. So the National Key Point Act was enacted. And then coming to the new dispensation, it was under the Department of Defense. And then it moved to the Department of Police. And then the only the minister then, even in the defense, was empowered to identify and declare the area as a national key point. So now, even today as we speak, we even though it's under the ministry position portfolio, it's still the minister that has that function. So the critical infrastructure is an executive authority that emanates from the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act of 2019, which then gives the birth to the executive authority, which is the Critical Infrastructure Council, whose role is to ensure that it identifies and declares the infrastructure as a critical infrastructure. The number of functions that it does in terms of the act, that is to creating guidelines and the factors to ensure transparency. When you declare the areas, there has to be transparency, and then to put measures for the protection, safeguarding, and resilience of such critical infrastructure. And then the functions of the establishment of the Critical Infrastructure Council is defined in that particular act and its functions thereof. And then you move to the establishment of committees and their functions, how they should function. And we move on to how the management of this act under the jurisdiction of the National Police Commissioner, and how it should be able to manage that. It provides for a number of things such as the reporting obligations, the functions of the inspectors, the process of transition from the National Key Point to the critical infrastructure, and repealing the National Key Point Act. That's my understanding.
Thank you, Honorable Pico. Would you love to ask a follow-up question? If you're happy, that will take us into the Honorable Shembeni.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My next question is, do you think that the public should be allowed into the critical infrastructure and be free to take photographs? Thank you.
So the second part, and be free to take, I think, or photographs. Okay. In terms of the definition of the critical infrastructure, with the new dispensation, because the matter of public interest is at the center of the critical infrastructure, and it gives the council will have to come to Parliament to account. It means that now there has to be public scrutiny. In terms of the photograph, I'll say no, because as much as we've got right to access to information, there are limitations. There are other pieces of legislation, such as the POPI Act, which protects the information. Now, coming to taking pictures, because it's a critical infrastructure, you'll be violating that security aspect that you need to put in place by declaring an area as a critical infrastructure, which means you're protecting it from any act of sabotage. Therefore, making pictures public of a critical infrastructure, I strongly believe that it will compromise the infrastructure.
Honorable Shembeni, before I take Sheikh Kimam.
No, thank you,
Honorable Sheikh Kimam.
Thank you, sir. You do agree, though, that not all critical infrastructure is that a risk, or that greater risk, that pictures will not be allowed at all. There will be certain critical infrastructure, like the parliament itself is a key point in South Africa, and there's often nothing wrong with it. So surely it must be based on an assessment of that particular critical infrastructure.
Yes, I do agree. When you declare an area as a critical infrastructure, you do a risk assessment of that area. It can be public or private. So, and the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act provides for the risk categorization of that particular area. So which means when you, an example that they gave, Parliament is public, which means you have to put rules according to the risk categorization of that particular critical infrastructure. And then, which means there would be general rules and the exceptions in terms of some of the critical infrastructure identified. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that response. Honorable Sheikh Imam, you have the next question.
Are you not going to six for the coming year? Okay, thank you very much.
What do you believe is the role of the police and security agencies with respect to critical infrastructure?
The role of the police is to, because it says you need to put measures in place to ensure the safeguarding, the resilience, the protection of the critical infrastructure. It means that resources have to be deployed in after the risk categorization of the critical infrastructure in line with the PFMA and other financial instruments. The police will then protect that critical infrastructure. And then let's use an example of a high risk, which means the security, state security has to be involved as well in ensuring that it's protected. So these two organs of state have to work together for the safeguarding of the critical infrastructure. And then most critically, to ensure that the people that are responsible for safeguarding that critical infrastructure has got all the systems and mechanisms to manage the critical infrastructure effectively.
Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam. You'd like a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yeah. What do you believe is the responsibility of the security agencies in this?
The security agencies as a cluster is to ensure that the critical infrastructure all the infrastructure that has been declared as critical infrastructure are protected at all times. It means that if I were to be in that particular critical infrastructure, I need to be issued with a top secret certificate of clearing that I can perform in that space, and then ensure that there are proper resources in ensuring that the critical infrastructure is protected at all times. Most critically, let's begin from the point of what if something goes wrong. What if it's attacked as a critical infrastructure? What, how will it impact the economy, the people of South Africa? So the security agencies have got a responsibility to ensure that citizens of this country were protected at all times.
Honorable Mission.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Rambao, as you agree that Parliament obviously allows the public and also the taking of pictures. Now, my question is about...
My apologies for the interruption. Could we just understand with the technical team there's a noise? There's a disturbance on our sound system. My apologies for that. Honorable Meshu, you may continue.
My question, sir, is as initially you said, photographs should not be taken. And while they are taken in Parliament, what would you suggest would help people know where they can take photographs and where they cannot take photographs? Would you expect the police to police them, to follow them as they walk around, or would you prefer signs to be posted in different places, particularly where photographs should not be taken? Thank you.
In order to prevent people from taking photos, because in a public space, people will be coming in to receive a particular service, not knowing the rules and regulations. But the bare minimum in terms of what is expected of the public, you put signs, you put the messages, so that those who have got disability in terms of visual, who can't read, they should be able to at least see. And then as part of the induction, getting into the building, there should be a system wherein you are able to explain the do's and the don'ts in the particular building. So which means when I come as a visitor, I should be made to understand that you are now entering a critical infrastructure area. These are the basic minimum rules and regulations. You may not take pictures inside. You may take pictures in this area. It then empowers visitors in terms of understanding what it is that they need to do while they are within the vicinity.
Thank you very much. We have been joined by Mr. Gershwin Dixon. He is the committee secretary for the Select Committee for Security and Justice, so he is well briefed on the topic. He is part of the secretariat, so don't mind him. He's taking down notes and he is assisting the chairperson. Thank you very much. Would you want another follow-up? Any member? You happy? Could I then go to Honorable Majosi?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Mr. Hamba. In your opinion, what are the key challenges facing the council and what role should the council play in strengthening critical infrastructure?
The immediate challenges that will be facing the council is to review the current list of all the I'll call it national key points area, which will then be called critical infrastructure areas. And doing that reviews, doing that review will mean that you have to develop guidelines and procedures in terms of what are the rules that you need to follow in identifying such areas, without compromising the security of the state. And then after that, you then say, are these rules or factors and procedures that are in place, can they stand the test if you put them before a judge? Will they be able to answer for themselves without your presence in interpreting that? So it means that the Critical Infrastructure Council has to put up systems in place as a point of departure, has to put up policies, has to ensure that there are, the systems are functioning, and then the reporting obligation mechanisms are in place. It may take some time or a few months before you hit the ground running, but fortunately enough you have the National Key Point as a point of reference. However, this one, the whole migration to the new critical infrastructure council it comes with all unique challenges in terms of the resources. You do the assessment of the resources that are currently deployed in those areas after doing the risk categorization of the critical infrastructure.
Thank you very much for those responses. We do appreciate it. Honorable Dr. Blanche.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning again, sir.
Name the key strengths from a technical and leadership perspective which you will bring to the CIC if you are appointed, and what do you think are your areas of growth that you would be needing? Thank you.
The key strength is that I've performed my functions in various industries. I understand fully well the education industry, the health industry, the agriculture industry, including the agro-processing, the understanding of the whole framework, leadership framework in terms of what is it that needs to be done in terms of corporate governance. I see the Critical Infrastructure Council as the board that accounts to the shareholders. So my training in corporate governance has empowered me to understand the role of each stakeholder in an organization or within the country. So this gives me the strength to understand the role of the Critical Infrastructure Council and at which level should it operate, the reporting obligations. Meaning I will not be too operational, finding myself entering into a space where it is an operational matter or technical matter or an executive matter. You don't develop the procedure or factors. You approve them, taking into consideration the matters that are in the public space, in the macro environment. So these are the strengths that I bring to the Critical Infrastructure Council as an individual. My experience and qualifications has empowered me to understand the risks associated with the sabotage of the critical infrastructure from the security point of view. There are areas or sectors that are very critical that needs to be protected. I'll give an example, water, the telecommunication systems. We're in the fourth industrial revolution. My ICT background says to me, well, we're in the fourth industrial revolution, and now we have got the challenge of cyber security. All these challenges, I'm fully concerned with them in terms of this is where we are, this is where the country, the world is moving. And then my experience and qualification empowers me to be able to respond according to the challenges that may be faced by the committee in terms of dealing with the issue of preserving the critical infrastructure. Yes, yeah, fine.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rambau. Honorable Dr. Blanche, you have a follow-up, and then Sheikh Imam, do you have a follow-up? Honorable Meshu, could we start with Honorable Dr. Blanche with your follow-up?
Thank you, Chairperson. Are you aware of any technical, let's call it cutting-edge technical development globally that you think that can possibly be introduced in South Africa to improve the situation locally? Thank you.
I'll answer it broadly. The cyber, I'll answer from the cyber point of view. We are moving into e-commerce. Our new normal is about doing things sitting at home using our gadgets. We can transact, we can communicate. All these things comes with their own unique challenges. Now you define the area as a critical infrastructure, but the employees are working from home, which means they have got gadgets that they are connecting to that particular infrastructure. The exposure of that particular infrastructure from the technical point of view is critical for you to be able to review that, to ensure that at any given time, that critical infrastructure is not only protected physically, how also in terms of the cyber security. So this is the, yeah, the input.
Are you happy, Honorable Dumlaj? Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your responses, sir. I see you've got a vast experience in managerial aspects and things. However, I don't see much experience in the security sector, and part of the responsibility in this council is going to be the issue of security particularly. Added to that is management skills, which a lot of which you possess anyway. So I'd like you to tell me how that is going to impact and whether you'd be able to deal with that. And very importantly, I see you are an independent consultant, okay? And I'm concerned about how will that impact on your responsibilities if you were appointed on this council, given the fact that you know what is happening in the country at the moment with collusion and, you know, with corruption and whatever it is. So how would you separate your responsibilities in this command council with the temptation, by virtue of the fact that you have a company, an independent organization, will it not impact? Are you able to deal with those things so that you separate the two, so that there's no overflow or temptation to, you know, because remember you're going to be in very senior positions in this council and there's certain responsibilities that go with it, particularly with outsourcing and things like that. So I'm just a bit, I'd just like you to give us the reassurance, how would you deal with these things?
When you are an independent consultant, you deal with different clients. And then you are in a position to understand their strengths and their weaknesses. And that the first thing you do when you engage a particular client, you sign the non-disclosure agreement, which means now you have got a moral obligation to ensure that what you discuss with party A, you don't discuss with party B. It talks to your conscience in terms of how you respect your tools of trade, which is your qualifications and experience. So I strongly believe that when you sign that non-disclosure agreement coupled with your internal spiritual conscience, you are able to deal with whatever challenges that may arise as in line of duty. Yes, it's natural that temptations are there, but the question is, looking at the investment that is made in terms of the your studies, your experience and everything, would you simply agree to compromise what you have worked so hard for? for a particular monetary value or anything that can compromise the state. So I want to reassure the committee that once I commit myself to a particular function, I do it within the framework and the expectations of what needs to happen. My experience in the parastatals, in the government, in the private sector has given you an opportunity to understand the roles and responsibilities. So wearing a jacket, a particular jacket for a particular meeting is very critical, and understand the why. Why am I here? What's the purpose? If I don't perform according to the minimum standards, what are the risks or compromise that will be exposing the very same cancer that I'm operating with? So coming to that question of experience in the security industry, yes, limited. However, this year I took a decision before I even saw the advertisement on the national publication about the critical infrastructure, that I want to expose my to respond to the call to service so that I can broaden my horizon. So I am very personal, always eager to learn new things. I get challenged when I am learning new things. In terms of preparation for this, I've gone through the Police Act to understand it from the legal framework, what is the functions of the police service, coming to understand the critical infrastructure as going through and understanding the stakeholders and what is it that they need to do. The whole BAIA, the POPI Act, all these pieces of legislation that are there that governs how you need, what is it that you need to do in order to manage the information that is presented before you.
Honorable Mason. Thank you very much. That takes me to Honorable Moss.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, sir. Stakeholders' relationships. Managing key stakeholders' relationships is important. This responsibility of the CIC. At times, stakeholders can be very demanding. Describe how you manage unreasonable stakeholders' expectations. If you understand the question, you see, most nowadays the toy toys in the country, where they damage properties and stuff.
When you're dealing with stakeholders, first or the most critical thing that you need to ask yourself is, what is the issue at hand? Before jumping into conclusion and making a certain assumptions or recommending certain solutions. Being exposed to manage the stakeholders, both in the public and private. Stakeholders have their own demands. They will put demands on the table. The most critical thing that you need to do is to ask the question, why, before you go into answering how and what needs to be done. Why? Why is this person demanding this particular service or demanding this particular thing? Once you understand the why, and then you move to the next step of say, what are the alternatives in addressing that challenge that is before you? And then of the alternatives that are in front of you, you then go and say, what is the best solution, alternative, or the alternatives that are in place that I can deploy in this situation? And then critically, because stakeholders are different, unique individuals or groups, communicate how you have reached that particular decision. Even though you are communicating from the point of authority empowered by law, but do everything within your power to communicate and make them feel to be part of the decision. And then when we say we are winning together, it's because throughout the process, we are moving together and until we reach a particular logical conclusion. So not everybody will win, get 100% of what he or she wants. However, they want to feel comfortable that they were part of the process.
Honorable Moss, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Jefferson. If you know what is the concern of the stakeholders, what will you do about it to educate them?
The moment I'm aware of the concerns of the stakeholders, firstly, I refer to the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act because it gives the bare minimum rules. Because the concerns might be in conflict with the law, which is the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act. So the moment I establish that, I then educate the stakeholder in terms of the what is required in terms of the law. Because whatever decision that we take as a critical infrastructure council has to stand the scrutiny of a judge. If there's somebody saying, I'm not happy with the decision that you've taken. And then it's the duty of the critical infrastructure council to ensure that that particular stakeholder is taken into confidence and made to understand that this is not it's not a personal matter, it's a functional, legal matter that needs to be adhered to. But most critically, open communication with the stakeholder will ensure that the stakeholder feels comfortable.
Thank you very much. Any other follow-up? Honorable Majozi and then Honorable Mation.
Thank you, Chair. When we first started, you told us about your experience and that you are a teacher and you are also helping the society, which means you are part of the community. Whenever you are faced with challenges, how do you respond to them? In a community, when you are teaching all the learners, obviously, then you must be in contact with the parents. You must do this with the parents. Then how do you present yourself towards them, and how do you take on the challenges that you face at that present moment?
When you're dealing with the community, there are various stakeholders that belongs to various political formations, and then civil organizations. They're coming from different perspectives. What is critically is to recognize the space that you are operating in and respect the position they have to occupy in that particular space. You don't have to agree with the ideology that they are pushing. However, you need to look at what is at hand. When you put a project in place, that gives a community an opportunity to get some stipend. One of the critical things that you need to ensure to do is to first recognize that unemployment is very rife in the country. So any opportunity that says you're going to give them something that will give them a stipend, deal with the issue of poverty. People will always come with some tricks in order to be part of that. But as long as you have not put your selection and recruitment process transparent, you're going to be faced with challenges. And then identify the leaders in that community to ensure that you engage them. You don't identify the people that you agree with, you you engage everybody that is in, that you are dealing with in order to have a diverse view. They can always contribute positively to your process or system. You can firstly define the process, however, they can always come and contribute positively to your process.
Thank you. First, Honorable Sheikh Imam, and then Honorable Nation.
Is this for me for a follow-up, Chair, or that last question that I have?
You said you had a follow-up?
No, not a follow-up.
Okay. Honorable Nation.
Mr. Rambo, what would you do when stakeholders make a demand that are conflicting with your personal ethics, and along the line, one of your council members sides with the stakeholders that are making demands, and that is conflicting with your personal ethics and values? Thank you.
Firstly, your personal moral obligations. You know the framework, the range that you need to operate from. However, when one of your council members is siding with the stakeholder, what is critical is to always go out and have a caucus and find each other, because the moment you send a conflicting message to a stakeholder, you appear divided. You don't know what you're doing. It affects the whole body. So which means when you're engaging the critical stakeholder, and then one of the person that that you're working with, you're no longer showing a unified force. You are now divided. The stakeholder, because it's an external person, will take advantage of that and push a particular agenda. So many a times when you disagree on a matter, it's how we see things. You may find that we all agree that we have to go to Limpopo, but the mode of transport different. You prefer certain things over the other. So what is critical is that you ask for a 2 minutes caucus with your council member to understand your point of disagreement, and then come and present a unified cause, obviously explaining what he's saying we need to do. Is it legally right, morally right? It can be legally right and morally wrong. So you need to explain those kind of situations to your partner or colleague before you present it to the stakeholder, and present a one message which is not sending the wrong signal to the stakeholder.
Thank you. Honorable Sheikh Imam, do you have a last question? Honorable Shimbeni, sorry, I didn't see your hand.
Thank you, Chakasa. My question is, what are you going to do in case whereby you are serving under a manager or a director who is giving a wrong impression of the council? Will you keep quiet, or will you go straight and address the issue with that director that you are serving under to say, this is not correct, the correct thing is this one, or you will just keep quiet? Thank you.
Okay. My understanding of the question is that as per Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, there are certain directors that will be in the Critical Infrastructure Council. And then when they go back to their respective departments, they are reporting to somebody senior. And then that particular somebody senior is giving a lawful instruction. So what will such director do? Personally, because I'm not in that space, I've come as an independent, I will express my view in line with the particular framework that I'm dealing with. But to answer that, assuming I'm a director, now when I'm saving in the critical infrastructure, the piece of legislation that governs my functions is defined in the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, and then the functions of the Critical Infrastructure Councils are also defined, which means I've got a duty to bring it to the attention of my senior at work to say what you are giving me, what we are doing, because I need to be part of that. What we are doing, I think we are not doing it right, because these are the potential areas of conflict. It will lead us to this, we will compromise ourselves in the process. So I think a chief director that will come and serve into the Critical Infrastructure Council should accept that he or she is now working in a particular structure with its own rules and regulations, and then should not shy away from addressing the senior at work if anything is wrong according to law. As long as you've got something to back up your argument, you should be bold enough to stand your ground and confront that person in a respectful manner.
Thank you. We'll take the last question now from Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Thank you, Chairperson. So my question to you is, have you ever been criminally charged and or convicted, or has any serious allegations of corruption, fraud, theft leveled against you, or have you been brought before any disciplinary hearings in any companies that you may have worked for gross insubordination, absenteeism, dereliction of duty, etc.?
I've never been criminally charged nor appear in a court of law as a witness in any matter, criminal or legal matter. I am privileged to have walk the straight path in my life, and then I am very much comfortable for any organ of state to look at my record. I strongly believe that there is nothing that will say there's something that's missing. I just got my police clearance last year in September. From time to time I applied for police clearance. I've also submitted my fingerprints as part of the preparation for this interview. I'm quite comfortable with the how I've conducted myself up to this point.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ramba. As you know, we will be looking at members who are appropriately qualified, who are knowledgeable. It is very important for you to note that the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act allows us to have private and civil society sectors represented. So we've asked you questions about your role in the private sector. I've explained to you the logistics around what the future will hold. The process for the portfolio committee is to nominate these candidates, and then, as you know, the speaker has referred this matter to the committee. We are happy that you've responded to our advertisement, and the letter from here, your letter was sent, your application and your credentials were sent to the State Security Agency for vetting. So please do not be surprised, you are not the only candidate who was vetted. All candidates have been vetted. So those who have been called for an interview have been vetted. As a candidate, you also have the opportunity now to ask us questions if there's any matters of clarity which you seek.
Actually, just answered it because a while ago, going through the Critical Infrastructure Act, there's an indication of the process step by step and the vetting process and the interview. I wanted to check if myself being seated here, did I receive the top clearance?
Mr. Rambao, when you looked at our advertisement and you applied, you immediately consented to vetting or to be vetted. So I just wanted to tell you the fact that you're sitting here today means that you have been vetted, and indeed that is the first step you have passed to be able to sit here. So you can be very comfortable if you're sitting here. Anyway, if there's anything else you'd like to ask us?
Thank you very much. I just want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to engage. I'm happy with the type of questions. It was engagement, and I've learned a lot in the process. I really want to thank you all. Yes.
I'm very happy that you have understood the process to be fair, and that the questions were fair. Thank you very much for traveling from Limpopo and availing yourself for this interview. The panel will make further recommendations, and please don't be in a hurry to receive a response. It is not because of our incompetence. Remember now, we are on recess, and these members came here during recess. So they're not supposed to even be in Parliament. So that is their commitment towards this process. And the Parliament will be in recess until August. So we'll only be able to have that opportunity to table it in Parliament in August. So it's not an oversight from the side of the committee. It is just the dates which we are sitting within and the dates which Parliament will be sitting. So please, if your response is delayed, don't have the comment that Parliament is once more useless and inefficient and takes us 6 months to respond to you. I want you to know when to expect a response so that you're not anxious and so that you have a clear understanding that even our team is highly effective and efficient, and you rest assured will receive a response. Thank you very much, and travel back safely. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to the panel. They will take you out. Can you just sanitize your hands before you leave, please? Honorable members, you can stretch. The next candidate is Dr. Patience Mbava. The meeting has concluded now at exactly 10:30. That has given the candidate sufficient time. 13, when you finish.